Good morning, everyone. It's Monday, March 4th. I'm John Weigel here with Martina Bertou, and this is The Hustle Daily Show. We're back with our favorite AI expert and editor of HubSpot's Next in AI blog, Martina Bertou, as we parse through some of the biggest updates from the AI industry in February. We'll chat about OpenAI's Sora, Google's Gemini rebrand, NVIDIA's sneaky rise, and how all of it can affect you in March and beyond. We'll chat about all that in a bit, but first let's give you the hits and headlines today across business and tech. Starting with some movie news, Dune Part 2 had a $32.1 million opening day in North America, putting the film on track for a projected $72 million to $75 million at opening, which is double the first film's $40 million. Next, if you're hoarding any Chick-fil-A sauce cups in your car, you better double check them. The fast food brand is telling customers to throw away their Polynesian sauce over allergy concerns, so look out for that Polynesian sauce in your glove compartment. Next up, Apple analyst Ming-Chi Kuo found that of the 1% of Apple Vision Pro customers who return the device, 20 to 30% of them do so because they can't figure out how to set it up. Moving over to driverless cars, Waymo is bringing its robo-taxis to Los Angeles in addition to its operations in San Francisco. Waymo said that its approach to LA will be, quote, incremental and involve working closely with officials and locals. Moving over to Meta will delete all Oculus on March 29th. Any users who haven't switched to Meta accounts will lose their apps and purchases. Meta acquired Oculus in 2014, back when it was still called Facebook. And finally, tickets to watch college basketball superstar Caitlin Clark play for the Iowa Hawkeyes are currently averaging about $571 per seat and are the most expensive ever for a women's game. That's more than 1,000% above your average NCAA tickets. All right, as mentioned up top, our main story today is all about everything that happened in the past month when it comes to AI. To give us that insight, once again, I'm joined by Martina Bertou. Welcome, Martina, or should I say welcome back.
Thank you, John. Happy to be here once again.
Yes, thanks for being here once again to talk about the ever-changing industry of AI. Is there anything since we talked about last time that kind of came as a surprise to you in the AI industry just in these past few weeks?
So it's not something that we've talked about yet, but it was a report that I read the other day that really surprised me. So when I think about AI and customer service, I usually am a little nervous, right? Because I always have the experience of calling customer service on the phone. Whenever I get hit with that automated system, I'm screaming agent as fast as possible.
Same. Absolutely.
I always think that a lot of people are like me. And when you bring AI into the mix, it's like, I don't like it. But Klarna, which is the buy now, pay later app that kind of has Gen Z in a chokehold right now and ruining their credit. So they've been using an AI assistant for the past month, and the results are pretty amazing. So it handled 2/3 of the chats, which is about 2.3 million conversations. And there was a 25% drop in the repeat inquiries. There was a 9-minute drop in the resolution time, so the time it took to resolve the customer's issue.
Wow.
And for me, the most staggering fact was that customer satisfaction rates stayed steady. And that was my biggest concern. You know, when you think about AI and automation and how it relates to customer service, it's usually not what some people want. They want that human touch. So the fact that they were able to use AI to replace agents and customer satisfaction stayed the same and seems even better because of these numbers was really, really surprising to me.
Wow. Yeah, that's a pretty crazy metric. I would not imagine that that would be the case ever.
Right?
So it's very fascinating that that's kind of taken place now. And I'm wondering what the difference is with the Klarna bot they're using, because in my experience and a lot of people's experience, I feel like the AI bots are usually all right, not exactly expert at solving any conflict. And usually they're seen as more of like a middleman to get to somebody to actually solve your problem.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see it evolve and get more information about how they're doing it and how other businesses can apply their strategy.
Definitely. And like, speaking of kind of rudimentary things, for a while, I feel like the concept of, you know, text to image, text to video, text to audio even was pretty new, pretty exciting, kind of a new frontier, but pretty simple. And in this past month, OpenAI introduced Sora, which is their text to video operating model. What are your thoughts on that? Because text to video has existed before then, but it seems like it's becoming really popularized now.
Yeah, I mean, I can't lie. The videos from Sora look pretty amazing. It looks really, really impressive. I think anybody who watches it is going to be blown away. It's so impressive. In fact, I don't know if you saw this, but the Hollywood Reporter spoke to Tyler Perry, you know, the TV producer and writer.
Oh, yeah.
And he's actually pausing an $800 million expansion project because of how impressive he saw that Sora was. So he was planning to expand his sets, right? Because as a TV creator, TV producer, you have to typically travel to different locations unless you can set one up where your set is, right? And because he saw how impressive Sora was at recreating these sets, he's thinking, maybe it's not something that we need to invest in because Sora can do it. We haven't even been able to test Sora. Right now, it's in this red teaming phase where they're checking for vulnerabilities. They're also working with visual artists and designers to see how we can support their work. And it's one thing to see a demo, right? It's always looking very impressive. It always works really well. But then when it gets to the user, is it going to be the same result? We don't know yet.
Yeah. The first thing I thought when I heard this news was about how companies like Getty or kind of stock footage companies that places like Hollywood and YouTube kind of heavily lean on may experience a hit or may have to really develop their own AI technology to combat this.
No, absolutely. I think there's a lot of cause for worry here because at its core, I think, and in this case, AI is putting the power in the hands of the consumer, right? So you're thinking about Sora, it can help create the next Tyler Perry, the next person who doesn't have the resources to travel to a location to film this huge scene. They can just use Sora to kind of build a skeleton of a set that they're looking for and then have a designer or an animator or somebody come fill in the gaps. And so I think a lot of companies like Getty are gonna have to figure out maybe reshape their competitive advantage and reshape their competitive value, because if AI can do it for you and do it well, it's going to be interesting to see how they pivot to still be a resource for people.
You mentioned something very important there, which is do it well, right? And we've kind of seen some of these AI models get it a bit wrong in the past month.
Every day.
Including kind of every day, every single day. One of the more popular instances this past month was Google's Gemini, which kind of rebranded from Bard to Gemini this past month. And there were a lot of complaints about how images that were generated by text through Gemini that showed some, quote, historically inaccurate images of humans and some kind of very, very hot button and inaccurate portraits. what do you think about this massive issue? And I'm not sure it'll ever be corrected completely, but what do you think about it?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think we forget that just a few months ago, AI couldn't accurately illustrate a human. A human had too many teeth. It had the wrong number of hands, the wrong number of feet. And so the expectation that it's always going to be accurate, I think, is we're overestimating it. And I think this is why AI literacy is so important. We have to know that with AI comes hallucinations, which are basically a fancy word to say mistakes. It makes stuff up sometimes. And so it's going to happen with any AI tool. And I think even with fine tuning, we should and can expect things like this to keep happening. But for me, another thing that it brings up is data sourcing. So Reddit recently signed a licensing deal with reportedly Google. Neither party has confirmed that it's Google, but Reddit did say that they signed this huge licensing deal with an AI company. And one of the things that people were criticizing was the fact that, should we be sourcing data from Reddit? A lot of people say that it's kind of a black hole of just the worst kind of content that you can find on the internet, these full of conspiracy theories and things like that. And if this is the information that we're sourcing to train these AI models, should we expect it to affect the output? Absolutely. And so for me, that's where my mind goes. You know, AI is always going to be wrong, but I think it always goes back to the source. What data is it being trained on? And of course, you can always clean the data and there's that. But the source, I think, is just as important because it's going to dictate the output.
Oh, totally. I mean, we've heard of so much fallacy already with AI models being built on just the internet as it is. And, you know, a lot of these companies, it sounds like, you know, OpenAI, Google are kind of taking a similar approach to AI and trying to make their chatbots and trying to make them knowledgeable and be able to answer anything and create anything for you. But what about a company like NVIDIA? Like, NVIDIA has been in the news kind of recently, but they've been a bit under the radar in this whole AI boom because they mostly talk about AI hardware. Where do you kind of see NVIDIA in this atmosphere?
I mean, NVIDIA is on top right now. I think you can't, because you can't talk about AI without talking about AI chips, specifically, you know, CPUs, which are essentially data processors that are used for machine learning, gaming, things like that. And where NVIDIA comes in is that they started really early. Early on, they identified this AI trend and they stuck to it. And so now they're the incumbent. Everybody's coming in with AI hardware, but because they've been so strong in the game for so long, it's kind of hard to knock them down. Similar to a position that OpenAI is in right now, just a much shorter span. And the thing about them is they also adapted their product line based on the trends. So now they're offering things like specialized computers. Another thing they're doing is internally, they have teams creating and training language models. So they can anticipate, they have, you know, market research right there. Folks, developers that are using the technology, figuring out what gaps there are, and they can internally then create hardware that solves problems. So I think because of that, NVIDIA is really going to be hard to beat.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it sounds like it. And, you know, as for reporting by Wired, they're about to be valued at $2 trillion, which sounds astronomical. And they seem like, you know, they're not often talked about as much as like an OpenAI, who's kind of at the forefront of ChatGPT and the AI revolution, quote unquote. But it seems like NVIDIA is really making it work behind the scenes more so.
Oh, definitely. They have, right now, they account for more than 70% of AI chip sales. And I think they're not talked about a lot because it's very technical, right? The AI hardware, it's not as accessible to the everyday person. It requires a lot of technical knowledge. And so even though they are a huge player in the game, it's not something that customers or consumers have a daily interaction with. And so they kind of fall by the wayside, even though for AI companies, they're the number one AI company that they're looking at.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, last thing I wanted to talk about today is there anything that we should keep an eye out for the next month? I feel like I ask that question at the end of every one of our sessions, and the next month something completely different comes and whacks us in the face. But if you could just give any sort of prediction of yours or anything that you personally will be keeping a very, very close eye on, definitely let us know.
So I feel like we're going to see more text-to-video tools come out right now. Because now that OpenAI has released this text-to-video tool and it's not out yet, it's not available to consumers just yet, I think a lot of companies that have been working on tools or working on updates are going to feel that fire to come out with it now that the conversation has kind of become more popular. So after OpenAI released Sora, this other company called Pika Labs, which has text-to-video software, announced a collaboration with 11 Labs where video can now get lip sync.
Wow.
Is like lip sync a word? Lip synced, right? I think it's lip synced. I'm like,
I think so.
I don't think that's the word, but now say you create a video from Pika Labs. Now you can go on 11 Labs, create this audio, and then have it matched up with the video. So a speaker can actually match the words that you're saying. It's just really interesting. And I'm sure they were very intentional in when they decided to release it. They could have released it a month from now. But now that they're like, hey, OpenAI is getting in this text to video space, we need to get in the momentum and start releasing our products, I think a lot of other companies are going to follow suit.
Cool. Well, Martina, thank you again for giving us the lowdown for the month. Really appreciate you coming back. And we'll definitely be seeing you in April.
Definitely. Yeah, I love being here. It's fun to chat.
Thank you. All right, and that's going to do it for us today. Thanks for tuning into the Hustle Daily Show. We're a proud part of the HubSpot Podcast Network. Our editor today is Ezra Trupiano, and our executive producer is Darren Clark. We've got a lot more tech and business coverage in our newsletter. If you're not subscribed, go get yourself signed up at thehustle.co/email, and we'll see you tomorrow.